And we are back with episode 812 of The Critical Myth. I'm John, your host, and tonight we have...
This is Gary from Jacksonville, and relax, everybody. We'll get to the show, so we promise.
Yes, that's right. We do have promises to keep. We are going to get to the shows. We're going to get into the episodic discussion next time, at least the weekly episodic discussion. But this particular episode, I think what we're going to do is we're going to kind of ease our way into some other topics that are in some other ways to discuss TV topics that we've been hinting at. And it's about time that we kind of moved into that, especially now that the bulk of the regular season is over. We're moving into June. This is usually when we consider our 12-month cycle to kind of come to an end. And it's just a good time for us to go ahead and kind of continue to reevaluate exactly how we're going to cover some of these topics. And we've already been doing it for the last 6 months, roughly, really trying to change things up. So we're going to talk some TV. We're also going to talk about what the fall network schedule looks like, because I was surprised by a couple of turns of events, pleasantly in some cases, not so pleasantly in others. But yeah, we're going to talk about some TV stuff. So a little bit of a spoiler warning, Gary, if you don't mind.
Yes. As we discuss the various television shows, upcoming seasons, sometimes there has been news that's leaked, or we've seen something that you haven't gotten around to yet. If so, we don't apologize, but just want to give you fair warning that we try to discuss everything applicable at the time we record the show. So give a listen if you're fearless enough, or if you're fearful, put us on pause, follow up on the show, and then put us back on afterwards.
That's right. So what we're going to do here is, as I said, we're changing things up slightly. So one of the things that we've talked about now and then is how we handle the difference between streaming shows and then the weekly episodic shows, and what's a realistic way for us to approach that going forward. And I forget if we did this on air or not last week, so forgive me if we're retreading this. But Gary, I know you and I talked about this a little bit, where early on in the era of Netflix Marvel shows, for instance, and Hulu shows, and even on Amazon, the episodic structure was really being maintained very strongly in terms of, you know, oh, hey, we're going to, you know, have 13 episodes, we're going to drop them all at once, but you could watch each one almost like it was a weekly show. But I think what we find as this continues to evolve over the last few years is that we are getting less and less the episodic structure, and they are definitely taking the binge watching into account, and the streaming shows that are all dropped on a given day really feel like parts of a longer work. They're just hour chunks of a 13-hour story, for instance. Even to the extreme where, as we were talking about Twin Peaks, and we'll of course get into that a little bit more next time, Twin Peaks is almost doing things in a more bizarre manner, because you could...
Twin Peaks Bizarre? Oh, no.
You could ostensibly say that that's a show that should have been dropped 18 episodes all at once in order to binge watch it. It's a binge watchable show that is chopped up into hour-long chunks, and really there's no through line for a given episode that we can perceive so far. You're making a progression of a further hour into the 18-hour story. So I feel almost like that show was made for binge watching. And if there are shows like that, I mean, we can't really do it right now because it's not being released like, you know, all at once. We have to take it weekly. But if there's a show like, for instance, Iron Fist or The Handmaid's Tale, which is kind of a hybrid, what Sci-Fi did with 12 Monkeys, it's a show that is made or is available for binge watching. And that means that trying to force it into a weekly schedule doesn't really make sense. For one thing, you may just want to watch the entire thing. If it's really good, you're not going to want to have to stop just because of an artificial time constraint. Or if you just simply have time, like for me, I banked all 10 episodes of 12 Monkeys. The schedule's going to open up in the next few weeks. I'm probably going to binge watch those episodes pretty quickly once I get into them, because I really like that show. Other shows, you know, maybe one of us will binge watch it, the other ones don't, so forth. Who knows? But it feels like it should be handled separately and as a distinct entity, rather than taking a 13-episode season of Daredevil and stretching it over 4 months. It just doesn't seem to make as much sense to do it that way. So, that being said, there's a couple shows that are out there. I think I already mentioned now that I haven't gotten to 12 Monkeys. I'll do that soon. It's interesting. I'll at least say this much, Gary. Remember how I wondered how the 12 Monkeys podcast was going to handle things without it being... Yeah, they actually did release 10 episodes of their show, one for each episode that went out. And then they had a wrap-up interview with the show, one of the show runners, at the end. So they basically devoted their entire weekend to that show. Pretty much made it like a 48-hour or 72-hour event for them. And just made the whole weekend all about recording and discussing that show. So I don't know how well that worked out for them. I don't know if they're going to have a feedback show at some point, but I've got all those episodes sitting on my podcatcher, and at some point when I watch the show, I will be able to enjoy that podcast as well. I don't know that it really helped the whole question of how is the community going to stay engaged, but man, did they make their attempt. I got to hand it to them. Another show that this kind of, I guess this helps in some respects, because the question then becomes, do I watch this? Do I want to watch this? And there is a show where I kind of, I'm still deciding, and that is Sense8. For better or worse, not long after this came out, and it's been out a few weeks, and I've kind of had it on my back burner, it's been canceled. And for better or worse, it was very publicly stated by many people, hey, this show ended on a cliffhanger, a big cliffhanger, that is now not going to be resolved. So, I'm on the fence. Do I binge watch this show? To be perfectly honest, I've said it many times before, as much as I celebrate the diversity and the audacity of this show, the execution sometimes leaves me cold. Mm. Despite the fact that it's JMS, I really just can't get into it. I feel like there are times where there are something that he never really used to do as much in my memory, but I feel like sometimes there are moments in episodes that are just gratuitous. I know that even Edmund and I used to talk about this and debate about this during the first season, that it's like, why is there an orgy scene all of a sudden? Why is there this sex scene that just seems to be there just to have a sex scene? And that's not the way I'm used to him doing things. And I sometimes feel like it's done in order to shove the audience into the space of, look at the diversity, accept how much we're showing you exactly what the diverse people do. And it's like, it's not done elegantly, I guess you could say. It's not done, it's just kind of shoved around. It's kind of almost pandering after a moment, and considering the people who are behind it. That's really shocking to have that opinion. But that's how I feel occasionally of it. It doesn't come across as organically to me as, say, some of the sexual moments in American Gods, which runs the gamut in a similar way. It's just as diverse. And so it's strange to me that I feel like Sense8 was approaching it sometimes crudely. And I don't mean just because it's something that is not to my taste. It's just, it didn't come across as an organic part of what was happening. It was just kind of dropped in sometimes. And that's just, I don't know. Now it's like, okay, if I already had certain annoyances with the show, and I also felt like the plot was unnecessarily slow at times, and now I know that the show ends on a cliffhanger, do I watch it? Just to watch it? Or do I apply the same logic that I do to some of these weekly shows where I'm consciously saying, this was something that was towards the bottom of my list that I usually had to almost force myself to watch. Why am I doing that? Would I be better off watching, 13 episodes of a new anime that I may be interested in versus trying to watch Sense8 just because I want to support, Joseph Straczynski, or because it's something that is celebrating diversity and I want to support that as well, but it's like there are probably better things out there to do that with. And I know that's probably an unpopular opinion. There are a lot of people who love that show.
Well, I guess if you enjoy the characters, then maybe it's worth it, even though you're not going to get any closure. Hmm. But
Like half the characters anyway, but some of them I really felt like I didn't even know who they were after one season. So it is difficult. Yeah. Maybe this is just one of those things where it's like, this just isn't for me. This isn't my story. This is a story for someone else. Who enjoys these characters and the concept more than I do, which is perfectly fine. There's plenty of shows like that. But that's one of those things that this kind of approach kind of takes, where I sit back and I go, I really didn't want to stretch it out over a couple months, nor do I really feel like binge watching it. I'll let somebody else talk about it. Maybe, you know, maybe Edmund watched the whole thing, and he might have a better, he might be a better person to comment on it than I am. Mm. Because, like I said, if I knew that this show was renewed and that it was going somewhere, that might have changed my mind. Mm. But this is a show where, hey, I'm on the fence with.
Yeah, so maybe not, but yeah. You know, I do agree with you about some of these shows and the way we had been doing it. Not only is it that they're dumping them all at the same time, but they're not standalone episodes in most cases.
Right.
They are so tied into each other that it's even more than, as you mentioned, Babylon 5 before, where they had this sort of arc, but they still broke up the episodes, where nowadays, especially with most of the Netflix products, they are so meshed together. Really, it's almost like a commercial break between episodes. It's not that they're starting up a new beat of a storyline. It's just all one story, and you just have these sort of artificial breaks put into them. So it's it definitely does warrants changing how you watch them.
Yes, I believe that's true. Yeah. Now, the other reason that I want to do this, and I made my comment about Sensei, but let me also just say this. There are a lot of people that are angry at Netflix. Netflix is kind of in an interesting situation. And this is a sidebar, but I think that it's one to kind of get into. And I know, I'm basically begging, hey, if anybody has a difference of opinion about Sense8, please go ahead and let us know. We'd love to hear your feedback. I'm baiting it a little bit. The fact of the matter is that this show is hideously expensive.
I was shocked when I actually heard the number that they threw out there.
And Netflix has been throwing money at everything for the last few years.
Yeah,
and
but
it's caught up with them. They are bleeding money. And the CEO even came out and said that they feel like they should be taking risks with more high concept, more, you know, diverse, you know, type of high concept and high risk type of programming. And he said that. And then the very next thing he said after that is because we should be canceling things more often. Things should be pushing the envelope so that we can see what sticks and what doesn't, not just playing a million things that are safe. So, I mean, some people thought it was ironic then that within 48 hours since it was canceled. To me, that was what he was kind of talking about. Because, quite frankly, if you just look at the numbers, it had a passionate fan base, but it was a small one. Especially when there's a ratio. There's the budget to viewer ratio. And that is more important with these kinds of shows than anything. HBO, Game of Thrones, hideously expensive. But it's got a pretty strong following, and it's a huge prestige type of thing. Tell me, there's no way that you can tell me that Sense8 had the same kind of pop culture zeitgeist that Game of Thrones does.
Oh, definitely not.
Remotely close.
And then when you look at the number, and I don't know if we mentioned it, but yeah, it was like over 9 million per episode. You know, one season is almost $100 million. When you think if you put that into an actual feature film, the amount of money that might have technically come back.
Right. Now,
as you said, versus what they're getting for ratings, even if you want to put the entire $11 a month, per person that watched this out there, that's still not it's almost not a prudent investment.
And that's exactly it. And people also forget, the show barely got renewed for a second season. It was not a shoo-in by any means. So if they're bleeding money and they're looking for places to, they're saying, hey, we're going to be more aggressive about not just renewing things, just to renew them. They're going to have to look at return on investment. And the one thing with streaming shows, and everybody has said this since the beginning, how do you really gauge the success of a streaming show? It's really hard to do because there is that budget to viewership ratio. And how do they translate those viewers into return on investment? It's really hard to see. But people are sitting there saying, like, couldn't they have gone back to the Wachowskis and said, hey, you were asking $9 million an episode. Can you do it for $8 million? I really don't think so. I don't think they would have gone for it. It's not that simple. It's just like, Joe Straczynski is saying that, no, they're not really shopping this around because they don't think there's a whole lot of good chances. That's because they figured Netflix was going to throw out the money to them. There's no place else to go. No one else has that kind of cash and capital these days. But Netflix was also going into enormous debt to do it. And that's the other thing that I don't think people realize. The other side of this, too, is it was not Netflix's decision to end this show on a cliffhanger. You can't be angry at a distributor because the content creators decided to make things end on a cliffhanger. Unless you know 100% that you're going to be coming back for a third season, ending on a cliffhanger at the second season is your creative gamble and risk that you do. And there's no one else to blame but the creators for there being a cliffhanger on a show that has been canceled. It is not, we felt the same way about Alphas, and it was the same argument. It sucks. We wish that Sci-Fi had renewed that show for a third season. They didn't. Show ended on a cliffhanger. It was the decision of the people who ran the show to end the season on a cliffhanger. It's, yeah, this goes down to them. I mean, if you know your show barely got renewed, there are ways to end on a pretty definitive note and still leave plenty of places for you to go and pick up on a third season. There's nothing that says you have to have a cliffhanger at the end of your season. So I don't really buy that argument. I'm sorry, Netflix does not bear that responsibility. Nor does Netflix have to put a Christmas special or a miniseries together to resolve it for you. They decided it's not worth their investment. I would love to see the numbers and their justification for it, but has any network ever done that? You usually have to read between the lines. It's just a lot harder with a streaming show. And I understand people are annoyed because then they're like, but 13 Reasons Why I got a second season, and there's absolutely nowhere to go with that. Unless you have a, you know, an artificial second season with a different situation and you kind of try to write and replicate what they did with the first one, which was based on a book. Yeah, I understand why that's all ridiculous. There is no way that show was $9 million an episode. This show, Sense8, was a globe-trotting, expansive, massive storytelling effort. They said that from the very beginning, and I'm not surprised at all that this show is being cut off at the knees early from a lot of people's perspectives. I didn't think it was going to get a second season, and I really would have been just stunned if it got a third. And that's not even watching it, just knowing that much information. And the fact that while it has a passionate fan base, it's not this big, huge pop culture darling. It's not. It's a cult classic. It's a cult show. And those are notorious for for being high budget, low return. So I think that show is off my list, at least, unless somebody comes back and convinces me of something that is more than what the first season gave me. And I watched the first two episodes of the new season. The Christmas special, as I mentioned back at that time, left me cold. And it came back a little more interesting in the first true second season episode, but I really haven't been compelled to come back to it. That in relation to the other two shows that we could talk about. I'll get to the other one in a second, which is kind of another reason why... let's go to the other one, which is the other reason why I don't feel like we need to do this weekly. Iron Fist. How many times are we going to say the same thing every single episode? It was starting to get extremely repetitive, and it's like, why do we need to keep artificially dragging this out episode by episode, week by week? It doesn't make sense. We can binge watch it if we want to. We can find out whether or not we feel like it earned its keep at the end or not. I know that you've put some scores in here, so Gary, you've finished it out. I still have 5 episodes to go.
It continues to get better, and you will be happy if you manage to stick through it.
Okay. I've heard diverging opinions, but that hasn't really been affecting me too much, because if I had gone by the general opinion before I even watched it, I would have never started.
Generally, I feel that the drugs they gave Danny at the beginning have finally worn off, and that's about it. I'll leave it there. Yeah.
All right. Fair enough. I have 5 left to go, and I'll pick that up, and I'll see if it gets any better. But I think where I left it was basically that if I just stop trying to overthink it and just look at it as an intentional, flawed but intentional take on 80s ninja movies, that it plays better. But we'll see if that continues as we go. The show that I think is really knocking it out of the park right now, and actually is more important, in my opinion, than Sense8 is, and if you want to use a word like important, is The Handmaid's Tale. That show is by no means easy viewing. Anyone who's familiar with the book knows that it's not easy viewing, but I'll just say right now that Nadim is following this. He's putting reviews out on his site, and we've got scores from him on this. I've been watching it. I know that Edmund, I believe, has been watching it, although he hasn't put any scores in just yet recently. I'm only 4 episodes in. There's a few more episodes that have released since then that I have to binge, but this is not a very easy show to binge. It is a show that leaves you kind of contemplating the horribleness of human nature in many respects. But if you want a show that really digs into the indignities that women have to suffer sometimes and see it magnified through the lens of a certain fundamentalist viewpoint. This is a pretty stark adaptation of the original novel, and actually it's really well done, and it's terrifying in all the ways that it should be. And I feel like that is a far more effective show and far more a far better use of my time for, as far as streaming shows go than Sense8, unfortunately. But that's a show that, hey, Hulu put out the first few episodes. They're releasing it weekly. It's, like I said, a hybrid between a streaming binge, you know, like drop it all in one week type of show and the weekly episodic show. But yeah, I would recommend that. Right now, all the scores, we're not really done, but I'll just say right now, all the scores are 9 or higher. So take that into account. If we were to judge it right now based on the scores, it would be our number one show for the year. Is that saying something?
Okay, I'll put it in the list, John. Okay.
Yeah, it's also not something that you watch with your kids unless you want to have a lot of discussions about it. But it is one that we're watching, a couple of us are watching, and it's a good fodder for discussion and kind of digging into some contemporary issues as well. If nothing else, it helps to explain some of the fears and anxieties that people have in the modern day through a pretty biting metaphor and allegory. So yeah, Gary, any other thoughts regarding difference between streaming shows and weekly shows? I think, yeah, we're splitting it out. We're going to kind of come back to some of these streaming shows, add them to our list as we get to them, kind of revisit them, but we're not going to try and force it to be on a weekly schedule.
Well, yeah, the only thing I would say is that as we're talking about it, we're sort of defaulting to the Netflix model, and not every streaming streaming show is dumped ad nauseum. Perhaps they dump even as little as three.
Right.
So it'll be, I guess we sort of, I don't know if we're necessarily deciding that this protocol is just going to apply to Netflix or not, or if maybe for some of the streaming shows we will group them up, so to speak. But it's just the nature of the show. And I guess in some ways it depends how it's written. Most of the Netflix shows, for example, are written continuously, as I was saying. They're not episodic by any means. They're not even arc. They are just, it's one running monologue, much like a 2-hour movie would be. And so those, we definitely feel there is benefit to reviewing the work as a whole. But I think of last year with when we were talking about Powers, for example, which is falls under streaming. It was very, very much episodic, where you could actually break it out episode by episode. So we might have to maybe not wholeheartedly endorse this, but apply it as needed.
Yeah, I guess there's also a matter of timing. If a show drops like what Gary is talking about, where Hulu or some of these other stations put out the first few episodes and then drop new ones weekly, right? Mm-hmm. Powers was like that. The Handmaid's Tale is like that. There's a few others. Anything that's going to be on Hulu, I think that they do this kind of hybrid, like I said, way of doing it. But the thing is that what if that first dump of 3 or 4 episodes takes place in the middle of the fall premiere week? The timing really stinks to do it then, right? Because what's the chances that we're going to all have the time to watch the first 3 episodes and then stay on the weekly release schedule? Maybe it's not that realistic. Like for The Handmaid's Tale, technically the first 3 episodes came out right in the middle of the May finales. It was when there were 20 shows a week. No, it's just not going to be easy to do. It's going to be much easier to just let them accumulate and then capture them when we can. So it is going to be situational, but we will let people know what our decision is on a show. And we'll kind of take it from there. But for the most part, we will kind of at least keep track of them. We're not going to let them fall through the cracks just because we're not trying to keep it up artificially on a weekly basis, especially the Netflix shows where it's dropped all at once. But yeah, just wanted to kind of throw that out there and also kind of touch base on some of these shows and the current situation. But then just real quick, we're going to also take a look at what the fall schedule looks like before we wrap up this episode. And it's really just the main networks. We're not going to be able to get into all the cable and stuff, but this is just a brief overview and just a few of our initial thoughts looking at this. We usually go into a lot more detail when the larger schedule is put out. And just looking at Monday nights, some of the shows that are out there, Scorpion came back, which I'm still surprised that show is a thing. Really, it's just, I've tried to watch a few of the episodes, and it really just surprises me at how kind of knowingly tongue-in-cheek it is, and that still kind of works out. Lucifer came back for a third season. Still also shocked by that. Monday nights on Fox, 9 o'clock, The Gifted. That would be the X-Men show. That is out there. And real quick...
Is that the New Mutants one?
It's not New Mutants.
Oh, okay.
It has Thunderbird, Polaris, Blink, Eclipse, The Struckers, Yeah, there's kind of all kinds of fun people in there.
Oh, I hope they do something good with Blink. I always like Blink. Anyway.
He's played by Jamie Chung. Interesting. That's a good choice, actually. So middle class parents dealing with the realities of raising a family. However, when their teenage kids are involved in an incident at their high school which reveals they are mutants, they do all in their power to protect their children. Forced to go on the run, the Struckers must leave behind their old lives to flee from a relentless government agency that tracks down mutants, the Sentinel Services, which includes Agent Jace Turner. Complicating matters further is the fact that Reed Strucker is a prosecutor in the district attorney's office tasked with going after mutants. Yes, desperate and running low on options, the family's only choice is to contact an underground network that helps mutants in trouble. The mutants in the network, Eclipse, Blink, Polaris, and Thunderbird, are dealing with their own issues. So yes, this is definitely, there's Brian Singer is involved, the Donner, Lauren Donner is involved, Simon Kinberg, Jeff Loeb, Jim Chory. So these are people who have been involved in Daredevil, Jessica Jones, the X-Men franchise, for definitely. So it is all... whether or not it falls into the movie universe or not, this is definitely in the same vein as the X-Men films, it seems. So I'm pretty interested in seeing where this goes. That one will be on my list, at least to begin with. Supergirl Season 3, also on Monday nights. Military shows are big on Monday nights. There's one called Brave and another one called Valor on the CW. Neither really going to be my cup of tea, but hey, that's an interesting kind of change of pace.
Oh, I thought that was the Mon-El spinoff. Oh, geez. Okay.
Oh, Valor?
Yeah.
No, no, no. Very different show than what you're thinking then.
Oh, shucks.
Yes. So, wow, there's a show called The Gospel of Kevin coming out on Tuesday nights. After watching The Leftovers, that would be a very different show if it were what I was thinking of there. But no, this is... I don't even know what that's supposed to be, but okay. It's interesting, but maybe not so much. Let's see. I'm just going to say what it says here. Kevin Finn, a cluelessly self-serving person, is on a dangerous path to despair. In a downward spiral, Kevin returns home to stay with his widowed twin sister and niece. On his first night there, an unlikely celestial being named Yvette appears to him and presents him with a mission to save the world. Okay.
Hmm.
Interesting. Very different. People behind it are the people behind Agent Carter. So, that might interest some people. Not really my cup of tea, though. So, yeah, the NCIS franchise continues. This Is Us, second season, for those who liked that angst-ridden joke. The Flash, fourth season. DC's Legends of Tomorrow, third season, in the fall. Wednesdays, we have the second season of Designated Survivors coming back. We have a show called SEAL Team. There you go, another military-themed show that's new in the fall. That seems to be a real trope. The Blacklist is coming back for the fifth season. Riverdale, second season. And then Dynasty is coming back on the CW, which has really been kind of an odd... that was an odd new show for them, or that they're promoting. I really didn't see that coming at all. I hadn't even heard about it.
I'm assuming the cast is much younger this time around.
Yeah.
Given
yeah,
the core audience of the CW, we're talking about 20 and 30 year olds instead of 50 and 60 year olds.
I would guess. I would certainly guess. Gotham coming back for a fourth season.
I know, stunned. The little show that can, eh?
Stunned, especially since by all accounts the show is not getting any better. However, what is interesting is that after that on Thursday nights on Fox is The Orville.
Oh, yes.
Yes. Seth MacFarlane, directed by Jon Favreau. The Orville is a one-hour science fiction series set 400 years in the future that follows the adventures of the USS Orville, a mid-level exploratory vessel. Its crew, both human and alien, faces the wonders and dangers of outer space while also dealing with the familiar, often humorous problems of regular people in a workplace.
So this is like that. So this is like the Red Shirts book, basically, or at least some variants of it.
The way it is coming across is that it's a cross between that and Galaxy Quest.
Okay. Well, you know, I've often said that if CBS won't give us Star Trek, that other people will find a way. And this is an example of us maybe not getting exactly what we want, but getting something because they won't give it to us. So I can just say neener, neener, neener.
And yeah, they are giving a very tongue-in-cheek kind of parody of it almost. And what's really interesting here is one of the names behind it, Bannon Braga.
Well, I danced for his pull out of Enterprise. Obviously, he has a long-running history with Star Trek and knows the genre probably as good as about anyone out there. So if there's someone that they're definitely looking for towards for at least some type of background or base to move to work from, I do have to admit he is one of them.
Yeah, he might be. So that's definitely something that's I've got my eye on. Of course, Thursday nights, Supernatural season 13, Arrow season 6. Friday nights, we have Once Upon a Time is moving to Friday nights for its 7th season, and the
and just as a side note.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, not to mention the whole big shakeup that so many of the cast are leaving this season. Oh, yeah. So it'll be definitely an interesting season for that show. Okay. So I'll be curious whether or not we'll be talking about a season after this, given all the I don't want to say defections. I mean, it's not like they're, you know, most of the actors fulfilled their contracts and they're moving on. So I can't say they're doing the show wrong or leaving early. They're done.
Yep, I agree. Marvel's Inhumans will be on 9 o'clock on Fridays, followed then eventually by Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. season 5. So those are being relegated to Fridays. So if we really felt like the fourth season could have been the last season, something tells me season 5 is definitely going to be an uphill battle in the ratings regard. I'm surprised by this. Friday nights, Fox, The Exorcist came back. I was sure that was DOA after one.
Yeah, the ratings weren't that.
No, they weren't
good. And
I heard all kinds of indications that was gone. So I was stunned to see that on the schedule. Just really, I'm glad because it was a good adaptation, but wow.
They're making things happen. Just like, look at, did it come up yet? Oh no, I guess it's not on the slate yet. Timeless, you know, look at how they,
mid season. So this was from the fall.
But, they just showed how that, executives are really, really willing to work with shows. And I wonder if that might be the case for that one.
Might be. Just skipping over then to Sunday night as we're just doing a very quick look at this. It looks like, I'm looking at, there's like one called 10 Days in the Valley, which is just the drama. There's Wisdom of the Crowd, which is a new show. And what is that? Some people may find this interesting, although it sounds awfully kind of familiar. Jeremy Piven is a visionary tech innovator who creates a cutting-edge crowdsourcing app to solve his daughter's murder and revolutionizes crime solving in the process. Okay.
So it's like Twitter.
An app solving crimes, basically. There's a lot on this schedule and very little of it on Sunday nights. Sunday used to be a big night for at least some people on networks, and now it is the networks are practically giving it up as far as genre people to the cable
networks. Well, the Last Man on Earth is still going.
That's surprising. It's still there, because again, that's one I thought was DOA as well at this point, but it's not. It's still going strong, which is surprising. And I'm sure people will find this show Ghosted, which looks like it's a big, you know, comedic look at conspiracies about aliens and such. It looks like Men in Black, but even more comedic. Starring Craig Robinson and Adam Scott, Ghosted is a single-camera action comedy about the unlikely partnership between two down-on-their-luck polar opposites tasked with an even more unlikely mission, saving the human race from aliens. Leroy Wright is a cynical skeptic and former missing persons detective who, if we're speaking frankly, thinks that aliens are a big old bunch of BS and that people who believe in them are certifiably nuts. People like Max, Jennifer. Max is a genius true believer in the paranormal who's convinced his wife was abducted by aliens. Both of them were recruited by Captain Ava Laffrey, a take-no-prisoners former Air Force test pilot and head of the Bureau Underground, a secret government organization investigating paranormal cases. Yes. So this sounds like The Odd Couple meets Supernatural.
X-Files.
Or X-Files. Yes, yeah. There you go. X-Files might be better. Who knows? As a comedy, that might work.
I want to believe it'll be fun.
There you go. There you go. But as Gary, you kind of mentioned Timeless, there are a lot of shows that are relegated to the 12-month cycle here. And there's a lot of shows that are going to come back in the midseason, especially on the CW and such. So, because we know that there were other things that were, like you said, Timeless was brought back, The Originals, iZombie, all back, Black Lightning is going to come, you know, be on the schedule at some point on the CW. Just a lot of shows are put into the mid-season versus the fall schedule. So this is just a taste, but there were a couple surprises on there, as far as I was concerned.
Well, you know, we can, like you said, we're getting, you know, the old 23 to 26 episode seasons are almost gone, and I don't necessarily mourn their loss as I think of all the filler shows, clip shows that they would pad some of these things with. I'd rather have a nice 13 to 15 episode, you know, show that, you know, that stays on topic and really, you know, puts a story forward. So I'm okay with all the mid seasons coming in. And honestly, I'm starting to look at these full season ones as almost the what's the word?
Relic of the past.
Yeah. Yes. Exactly. Yeah.
Well, what I think is interesting here is that you have shows like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. that are ostensibly at least 22 episodes, but they're really three related shorter seasons in many respects. You know, they call them pods, or they call them, you know, arcs, or, you know, from our perspective, we would call them arcs, but they called them pods or whatever the hell they want to call them. They were miniseries, basically. Three miniseries of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. that ran throughout the year. I think that's perfectly fine to do it that way, if they want to, because they could have taken those three arcs and could have just really spread them out, really had them be separate entities, almost separate miniseries, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. Versus, I think, some of these shows like, quite frankly, Supernatural at this point, as much as I love the show, could have shorter seasons and less filler. And they might even be more successful that way. So... all right, any last comments on the fall schedule or anything else that we talked about this episode before we go into our next episode and episodic discussion?
Oh, no, it's just I'm happy that there is a nice turnover and they're not really, that they are giving some new shows an opportunity.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to go ahead and wrap it up then, so until next time.
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, but there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews, and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review, so let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth, on Twitter at Critical Myth, or Google+, under The Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes, in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as fair use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG network, its partners, or affiliates, but let's face it, we're probably right anyway. Until next time. Watch, read, and listen, and believe in the critical myth.